You're listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee, here in the liberal land of long beards, lattes, and lutefisk. And now here are your hosts, Doug Padgett, Brett Johnson, and Hunter Hawes.
Brett and Hunter on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee for your Thursday afternoon. Hunter, how you doing today?
Fantastic.
Weather looking a little cloudy outside. I trusted biking in because weather.com said there was only a 5% chance of rain on their hourly forecast, basically the hours of 4 through 8 p.m. National Weather Service said only 10%. And what the heck's going on? Yeah.
It was higher yesterday, actually, because reading it. Yeah, it was closer to 40, 50%.
Yeah, well, it didn't rain at all. I was out biking around. It even caught the beginning of your show and the end of Matt McNeil's show. Good interview there with Richard Painter providing insight on the Mueller report. Lots of good information that he provided, and you can go back and listen to that archive over at am950radio.com or find the Minnesota Progressive Repartee podcast with your favorite podcasting app, or we also broadcast that on Twitter as well, since Richard Painter has, I think, about 48 million Twitter followers, something like that. He's got way more than we do.
Yeah, he does.
The station, we're not too bad. We got a couple thousand on there, but my own personal, well, I've only tweeted like twice in the past 3 years, so I have no followers. How are you doing on Twitter on your followership?
Yeah, like 1,000.
You got wow, that's pretty solid, actually.
Yeah. I actually used to have like 2,000-3,000, and I got hacked and lost them all.
Wait, are you serious? Yeah. You lost like half of your followers consciously noticed that Hunter got hacked, therefore I'm going to not follow him.
No. I got hacked and it just took away all of them. It happened to my Facebook, Twitter, everything. I lost an entire
So the hacker actually took your followers away.
Yeah. Okay. And it was right when I came back to Minnesota, and I had a fairly large following because I was a DJ and like promoter in New York. So losing it actually now kind of makes sense because now I'm doing something that's completely different from the people that were following me. So this new following is around this new content I'm doing.
The way I was picturing it when you said you lost half of your followers you got hacked, I was imagining, either people just noticed he was hacked or the hacker was posting a bunch of really obscene, stupid content.
Oh, sure.
That's actually what I was picturing. But yeah, I suppose on Twitter, you actually can manually tell someone not to follow you.
Yeah, I don't know how it worked, but it was crappy.
Wow, yeah. And you got your Facebook hacked as well. Unfortunate thing of being in the digital world, very easy to get hacked. So don't use QWERTY as a password or what are some of the other common ones? Yeah.
I haven't heard that in a while.
QWERTY? Yeah. Well, QWERTY's still applicable on modern cell phones.
I just haven't heard it as a term in a long time.
I'm not going to say like pass or something like that. I gotta get a little creative on that. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Maybe you have some horror stories of getting your social media account hacked, or maybe something a little bit more serious, like maybe a credit card or something. The only instance I had where that happened when I was on a road trip, somehow I would think one of the gas stations I was at, one of the rural gas stations, someone must have put like a little device in those magnetic strips on the gas pumps because I got home and I had like 40 charges to the PlayStation store and I don't buy anything from PlayStation.
Whoa, crazy.
Yeah. So fortunately got that taken care of. But that's the reason why you use that little chip on your card. Apparently that's supposed to be much harder to hack than the little magnetic strip.
Huh. Wow.
Yeah.
They were able to take the information that quick?
Yeah, apparently that's a thing where somehow on those little credit card readers, again, this is with the magnetic strip, not the chip. This is why credit card companies started doing this a few years ago. Apparently that's harder to actually like copy data from. But yeah, going back to the magnetic strip though, yeah, apparently if there's some kind of device you can put in those little readers, and then that's how you're able to steal that information.
Wow.
So fun stuff of getting hacked. Hopefully you're not getting hacked at home or sitting in the car, because that's definitely not a fun thing to go through, especially when you talk about companies like Facebook or Google. There's really no contact information. You can't just pull up your cell phone here and say, call Google. There's not like an operator or anything like that. You actually have to go through quite a bit of red tape to get unhacked and get your information all set. Well, I got to bring something up here because a few months ago, this is getting into political news, Hunter and I were wondering who's going to challenge Dean Phillips in the 3rd Congressional District, because with Eric Paulson no longer the Republican representative in the 3rd District, there's not exactly a deep bench of Republicans to challenge Dean Phillips. So we were musing that, well, maybe the Republicans would go down the local businessman route and try to get someone who wasn't involved in politics at all but had a business background. Well, Mr. Dean Phillips actually does have a challenger, and Hunter, you and me called it. It is a business guy who is going to be challenging Dean Phillips in 2020. So the name of this guy is Kendall Qualls, and there's really not a whole lot of information about him. The Star Tribune reached out to him, and they didn't get a whole lot. They actually ended up going to his LinkedIn page to find out anything about this guy by the name of Kendall Qualls. Apparently, he's a former U.S. Army captain, has spent the last 3 decades working in the health and medical technology industries. His current occupation, and I actually looked at his LinkedIn page as well to get a little more detail, some of his positions are listed as a healthcare IT disruptive startup company manager for an unnamed company. He actually didn't put what company that is, but what do you think that position means? Again, healthcare IT disruptive startup company manager.
The disruptive part kind of
puts a little bit of an ominous sound on it. He also lists a position as a board member of an innovative IT startup company based in Lexington, Kentucky. Again, we don't know the name of the company, though.
I always am blown away by these titles people have that you have absolutely no idea what they do after you hear it, except you just know they make a lot of money. But you cannot picture at all what a day's work is or what they're doing at their desk and computer other than just sitting there in a suit.
You know, I'm thinking about Mr. Qualls' previous title with that IT company, and I'm wondering if that's maybe who hacked you and me back in the day. An IT, not him personally, but someone with this title, an IT disruptor.
Disruptor.
I love that title. I'm an IT disruptor. That's like the classy way of saying you're a hacker.
Yeah, it is.
I have no idea if that's true. Again, we're accusing Mr. Qualls of doing that.
No, fake news.
Yeah. We're just saying someone that title kind of makes you sound like a hacker, IT disruptor. Now, here's an interesting part about his campaign run. He was actually asked by the writer of the Star Tribune about his campaign, and here's basically what he said. He referred all inquiries to his political consultant, which, let's compare the campaign slogans of Dean Phillips and Kendall Qualls. Dean Phillips, everyone's invited. Qualls, 2020, please refer all inquiries to my consultant. I mean, I don't know I know nothing about Kendall Qualls outside of what I saw in his LinkedIn page, but that's a layup question if you're asked by a reporter, why are you running for Congress? You can give a really vanilla, very generic answer. Just say, well, I'm looking forward to chatting with the constituents to figure out how I can best represent the 3rd Congressional District. Look, boom, done. That's the most vanilla statement ever. But the one way you don't respond to that question is, please refer all inquiries to my political consultant.
Yeah, who's running? You or your consultant?
Yeah, exactly. Kind of just makes you sound like a machine, I mean.
I know, just sitting at a desk, staring at the wall until someone comes in, then you engage. Not even looking at a screen or anything, just wall for hours.
Please refer all inquiries to my political consultant.
Yeah.
I can't answer that question until my human tells me what to think. So anyways, again, I have no idea who Kendall Qualls is, what he's all about. Maybe he's actually a really nice guy with some good moderate Republican positions. Maybe he's an old school Arnie Carlson guy. I have no idea, except that he doesn't want to answer anything. He just wants to refer everything to his political consultant, and apparently he had a title on his LinkedIn page along the lines of IT disruptor. I guess we might find out more about him later on, but as much as I can gather right here, Hunter, I am thinking this is the GOP kind of writing off this district, throwing in an unknown business guy running against Dean Phillips, because we were chatting with Matt between shows here. I think the GOP in Minnesota, and he agreed with us on this as well, they're putting all their money towards keeping the Minnesota State Senate. They're not going to be spending, I don't think, any money in the 3rd Congressional District with Dean Phillips, or probably even the 2nd Congressional District with Angie Craig. Even if Jason Lewis runs against her, I'm thinking Lewis is not going to get a whole lot of backing from the state Republican Party.
Yeah, well, that's a wise decision on their part, because that's where they stand a chance, and Minnesota is not going along with the whole Trump thing that the rest of the Republican Party is. So it would be wise of them to use their best candidates at some of those Senate seats.
Yeah, they absolutely have to keep the Senate, because remember, 2020 is a census year, and if the DFL were to take control of the Senate, they would have control of the State House, the State Senate, and the Governor's Mansion, which, if the Democrats chose in Minnesota, they could actually do gerrymandering of their own after 2020. I'm not sure they necessarily would, simply because of all the pushback that was put on the Republicans after 2010, but it is there as a possibility, and it looms even larger since Minnesota is likely to lose a congressional district after 2020, and Republicans would certainly hate not to have a seat at the table with that redistricting process. So anyways, that's why likely you're not going to see a whole lot of money put into the congressional races in 2020. I don't think we'll see anywhere near the amount of money we put in those races in 20. I think that's all going to the state Senate. Well, let's continue our tour of the congressional districts and some of the Republican challengers to the DFL representatives. You guys talked about this during the Matt McNeil show. Danielle Stella, who apparently is a QAnon follower, is going to be challenging Ilhan Omar. You guys talked extensively. Well, not necessarily extensively, but you briefly touched on what QAnon is. Basically, they just make stuff up and are conspiracy theorists. That's the best way to sum it up, isn't it?
Yep.
QAnon, works. Yeah. If you see that big letter Q on a Trump supporter's shirt, they're a Q supporter. In fact, Trump himself, I don't even think, is really digging the whole QAnon thing. I believe they have actually even banned people from wearing QAnon merchandise at their campaign rallies. But anyways, Danielle Stella is challenging Ilhan Omar in the 5th Congressional District. She is a Republican. You can get more information about her. You can listen to the Matt McNeil podcast. We're not going to get a whole lot of detail, but I did want to point out a Facebook message we got from, do you remember the guy's name who sent us that Facebook message off the top of your head?
I don't.
Yeah, I'll have to pull it up on my phone here. Either way,
Justin,
whoever.
Justin.
Yeah, Justin, thanks so much for the message on that, because apparently, Hunter, Danielle not only is a QAnon follower, she's also had a little bit trouble with the law as well, with some felony convictions, it looks like, as she was...
It's right in.
Yeah.
The Trump administration.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, she, I believe, has a couple of felony charges for actually shoplifting at some different stores around the metro area, and not exactly for small amounts. They were... Hunter, I'm relying on you if you got the article in front of you. Isn't it like $2,300?
So she was accused of stealing 279 items that are valued at $2,300 from a single Target store in Edina. And then there are a couple other reports of like higher tickets, $1,000 items. But... they have film footage of her.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty damning right there if you actually have film footage. So,
and she was held twice this year. So in the past, like, 365 days, she's been held by the police on this. And she is claiming that she is not guilty because she hasn't been convicted yet. So she says it's ridiculous that they're talking about her this way.
Yeah, well, it's...
Well, welcome to politics, girl.
Yeah, they're going... whoever you are, yeah, they're going to dig up your history. And I was going to mention, maybe to give her the benefit of the doubt, maybe this happened like 10, 15 years ago where you could come back with the old response, well, in my younger days, I did some dumb things, but I've learned from my past mistakes. But no, this actually happened literally in 2019.
And then this is good, too. In 2009... she pleaded guilty to driving impaired from alcohol and fleeing the police officers. So that was a felony, but she got it dropped down to a gross misdemeanor with this plea. And her big thing is that Minneapolis is full of crime and that she needs to be elected to clean up
the crime.
And it's like, well, you've done a good part of adding to it.
Whew, my, as you said, she would probably fit in with the Trump administration.
Mm-hmm.
But there you go. Those are two challengers, I should say, to two of our Metro congressional representatives. Again, challenging Dean Phillips in the third, Kendall Qualls, who we know next to nothing about except the fact that he was an IT disruptor and that he is referring all inquiries to his political consultant. And then we also have challenging Ilhan Omar on the 5th District, Danielle Stella, who has quite the checkered past, to say the least, as well as being a follower of QAnon. So speaking of the person that, well, Miss Stella is going to be challenging, that's Ilhan Omar. Let's talk about her for a second because, Hunter, I think there's so much rhetoric that's put out about her from both the left and the right, well, mostly the right, since they've really made her kind of the pinata they've been hitting, especially with President Trump. But you also hear people, I think, on the left as well saying, well, I like her policies, but I'm not really necessarily comfortable with her style or the way she speaks. But I kind of want to get beyond the rhetoric and actually look at what she has accomplished while being in Congress legislatively. And surprisingly, it's actually been a lot that she's got accomplished in Congress. I'm just going to read through some of the bills that she's actually authored or co-sponsored, because when you look at these bills, they're hard to actually disagree with, whether you're from someone on the right or someone on the left. Let's start off with one of these. The first one, this is House Resolution 394, the Intelligence Authorization Act, which is authored by Representative Ilhan Omar of the 5th District here in Minnesota, and it basically is going to reform the Terrorist Screening Database. The reason why is that the Terrorist Screening Database, its abbreviation apparently is TSBD, is also known as, well, you remember this from the Bush administration this term, the infamous Terror Watch List. This bill aims to actually reform the terror watch list, because the way it's currently set up right now is that it's a pretty low bar to actually get put on this terror watch list. And most concerning, and this is the reform that Representative Omar is trying to get with this bill, is that this terror watch list, again with this very low bar, also is being shared with foreign governments that have some pretty appalling human rights records. So it's not only trying to reform who gets on the terror watch list, but also trying to prevent this watch list from being shared with governments that have some less than stellar human rights records. I imagine a country like the Philippines is probably on there right now with Mr. Duterte, their dictator, who President Trump is actually quite a fan of. So that bill seems pretty reasonable to me, whether you're a liberal or a conservative. I think we'd probably want a pretty high threshold actually getting put on the terror watch list, because if you get on there, you're basically grounded from doing any travel. And then, of course, I wouldn't want that terror watch list being shared with a country that has a pretty crappy human rights record. How about this piece of legislation right here? This one she actually just recently introduced, along with some other lawmakers. This is called the Zero Waste Act. That was actually introduced today. It's a bill that seeks to end the use of toxic landfills and transition to a zero-waste economy, part of the Green New Deal, and that might be the part that kind of makes that bill, well, for lack of a better term, toxic to some members of the House of Representatives. But I like this idea, transition landfills to a zero-waste economy, because landfills are going to get to be a bigger and bigger problem. If you drive by any of them, they keep expanding and expanding as we get more and more people. And humorously, Hunter, I don't know if you remember this story from last year. This is a reason why Republicans might want to be on board with this. Do you remember the story in Alabama last year about the poop train?
No, I don't.
So what happened was this Alabama town, basically just being kind of a corporate sellout town in this rural Alabama area, they decided to take in all of the human waste. Well, not all of the human waste, but lots of the human waste from New York City. So there was a train that was delivering most of the human waste from New York City to Alabama, this small little town. And the residents eventually started noticing this town really stinks. Not necessarily in terms of lack of things to do, but literally the town smells. And they figured out that there was actually a poop train taking human waste from New York to Alabama, among other garbage. So if you actually had a zero waste policy, you wouldn't have a need for that landfill. But I just kind of find that funny that this red state actually is taking in all the human garbage from New York City. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. And one final thing, another good piece of legislation that Ilhan Omar got passed. The measure is one that actually is a resolution that would reaffirm Americans' rights to boycott in pursuit of civil and human rights. The resolution was co-sponsored by Rashida Tlaib, who you might remember as a member of the Squad. Now, the reason why this is important is, again, look at that on its face value. It's a resolution that would reaffirm your right to boycott in pursuit of civil and human rights. The reason why this was passed was that, well, unfortunately, this week, the House of Representatives passed a resolution that basically prevents or actually states their lack of support for boycotting the country of Israel and any other effort that supports BDS, that's the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Act in Israel. According to the bill's text, BDS, which was a movement back in 2005 when it began, calls for groups to apply economic pressure to Israel to achieve Palestinian independence in the Middle East. And what I like about Omar's resolution saying you should have the right to actually boycott economically if you want, because I would agree with that. That's just simply freedom of speech. It's nothing legislatively. It's actually using the free market and your own free will to say, hey, I'm not necessarily thrilled with what this country, whether it's Israel or another one, is doing. Therefore, I'm going to boycott them. So, looking at all three of these bills, Omar's bill saying that, hey, you should be able to boycott any country you see fit, or also this resolution saying we should move to zero waste, or the final one saying we shouldn't share the terror watch list with a foreign government. Tough to argue against any of those three bills. Wouldn't you agree there, Hunter? Those all seem pretty reasonable to me.
Oh, yeah.
So move beyond the rhetoric sometimes if you're talking to someone and they get fired up about Ilhan Omar because she hates America. Actually look at what she's done legislatively. It's actually a pretty good record and a whole lot more than some of our other representatives have done in the Minnesota delegation, both Democrats and Republicans. She's actually gotten quite a lot done. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Coming up a little later on the show, we're going to do something new that I think I might start on Thursdays because, Hunter, this was kind of your idea, how I come up with these kind of contrarian scenarios where I'm going to pose an opinion that's not exactly going to be popular, but I have some reasons for it. And it's a way to kind of get you thinking a little bit differently about politics. And I'm going to go right for the jugular today. I'm going to come up with a reason why I think it would be good for Democrats to have Donald Trump win in 2020. Uh-oh, okay, yikes.
You are going all in.
I know,
right,
I'm going all
bat
in on that one. Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to talk about that on the other side of the break here on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee with Brett and Hunter. Come on back to figure out why I think Democrats might be better off with a Trump victory in 2020. That's on the way next.
At Total Dog Company, you have the opportunity to shop local. We stock dog foods made in Minnesota and Wisconsin, such as American Natural Premium. Like all the foods we sell at Total Dog Company, American Natural Premium contains no artificial colors, flavors, or preservatives, and no ingredients from China. It is premium nutrition without a premium price. Find Total Dog Company in New Hope right off of 169 at 9432 36th Avenue North and at TotalDogCompany.com.
Food nourishes us. We need food to live. But how are we nourishing the food system? Well, actually, we're throwing a bunch of chemicals and we're making the dirt dead and then we're adding nitrates to the water and we're causing dead zones in the ocean. Oh, and we're also causing climate change. We do that with every bite we eat. But we can create something different. We can switch to a regenerative system. And that's what we talk about every week on Food Freedom Radio. So tune to Food Freedom Radio Saturdays at 8 a.m. or anytime via podcast. Food Freedom Radio on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
Don't be surprised if you hear your name when you walk into St. Paul Corner Drug. Our experienced staff make getting to know you their top priority. Developing a trusting relationship with our patients is the first step in providing personalized care that achieves the best outcomes possible. Make certain all your providers know who you are and what your needs are. It is a vital step in your well-being. Stop by St. Paul Corner Drug today to start a relationship with a staff that cares. St. Paul Corner Drug, pharmacy the way it should be.
The number one source of the Twin Cities gay scene is all digital. Follow Twin Cities Gay Scene on Facebook and Twitter. Sign up for the Scene Shot email blast for weekly updates and chances to win great prizes. No app is needed to view the bi-weekly web editions of Scene. It's GLBTQ media for the mobile generation. Find it all at TwinCitiesGayScene.com. That's TwinCitiesGayScene.com.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces is having its annual store-wide sale. For the entire month of July, all of our indoor and outdoor fireplace products and accessories are at their lowest price of the year. At Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, we display, explain, and install the Twin Cities' most diverse selection of indoor and outdoor stoves and fireplaces, including metal and masonry pizza ovens.
My dog Stenson loves summers, visiting the dog park, long walks in the woods, and sleeping in the sun. But he is missing winter. Oh, not the outdoor outhouse, no on his paws or frozen ears, but those lovely long nights in front of the fire. I bought an energy-efficient wood stove from Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces about 7 years ago. Having a wood stove means more than lower heating bills. It means a happy dog.
Come see us. We have over 35 working displays in our store, which is just off I-94 at the corner of Riverside and East Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis. Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, since 1977, out of the ordinary products and services to make fire work for you.
Get $50 for your trade-in regardless of condition when you buy new appliances from Warner Stellion. Buy at Warner Stellion and you get our already low price guarantee, trusted fast free delivery, professional installation, 18 months no interest financing, and now we'll buy your replaced appliances for $50 each. Choose from Minnesota's best appliance selection with friendly specialists who save you time and money. Say goodbye to your tired appliances and get $50 rebates for a limited time at Minnesota's original appliance specialist, Warner Stellion.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Brett Johnson. Look for partly sunny skies today with a high near 80. Tonight, a chance for showers and storms with a low around 68. Friday, sunny with a high near 87. And Saturday, sunny with a high around 88. Nightingale is the Eat Local Minnesota restaurant of the week. They have a menu comprised of snacks, bruschettas, and small plates designed for sharing but is sure to satisfy your appetite. Plus, they have thoughtfully crafted cocktails. Nightingale is located at 2551 Lindale Avenue South in Minneapolis. Find details at eatlocalminnesota.com. Listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee, like little theme there, Hunter, for something we might try on Thursdays. Brett's unpopular opinion or contrarian take, I don't know necessarily what to call it, but yeah, as I said earlier, I'm going right for the jugular on this one. I think there is a scenario where it might be better for Democrats to lose the 2020 election to Donald Trump. And I've thought about this for a while, thinking, does anyone else actually share my opinion? Well, it turns out a friend of the show actually does, because this is what jarred my memory to want to talk about this. And that's Ian Millhiser, our good friend over at Think Progress, who we frequently have on the show. He actually ran down exactly why it might be a good thing for Democrats not to win in 2020 and for Donald Trump to get reelected. Now, there's definitely some nuance to this. I would still ultimately vote against whoever, or vote for whoever is running against Donald Trump. This is just more looking at this from a purely political, not an ethical standpoint on why it might be good to lose in 2020. And, well, it boils down to this reason right here, the economy. Donald Trump, of course, tweeted a few days ago that he's going to win Minnesota because the state is having its best economic year ever. And as we've talked about extensively on the show, the economic data, while certainly looks good for large corporations and people who ironically actually live in blue districts, the economy not looking so good if you actually live in a rural area and work in the ag economy. And also, by the way, the manufacturing sector is not doing well too, as I believe it might technically be in a recession right now, since they've had, I believe, two straight quarters of economic loss. So the manufacturing sector might be entering a bit of a recession. But for now, the economy, at least as portrayed by the corporate media, is booming, and a lot of the data actually does back that up. But it's not something that I think is going to last, and I think, Hunter, you probably agree with me as well, that the economy really is on a bubble right now. I mean, the cost of living is increasing so much. We talk a lot about on the repartee, the lack of affordable housing. And then, of course, you have the massive corporate bubble that is taking place right now with corporations basically buying back their own stock to inflate their stock prices and then basically financing their buying back of stock through, well, just putting everything on a credit card. And eventually that bill is going to come due. And it's just a matter of when the economy actually does go to that downturn and possibly even a crash. And this is one of the reasons why I think you actually could be better off seeing a Trump presidency extend beyond 2020. And it's just this simple fact. If the economy is still, I'll put this in quotes, booming by the time we reach November of 2020, what would happen if a Democrat actually wins and knocks off Trump despite the economy being portrayed as doing very well? Well, the worst case scenario would be having a Democrat win in 2020, take office in 2021, and then due to some of the factors we talked about with a lot of the economic and credit bubbles that we have taking place right now, along with Republican obstruction, because, well, unfortunately, there's probably a good chance the Senate will remain in Republican control, which would mean Mitch McConnell could basically obstruct everything he wants. Well, let's say under that scenario, the economy actually crashes when a Democrat takes office in 2021 or 2022. Even though the reason for the crash, or at least a large reason for it, might be because of the previous administration, unfortunately, the public doesn't really think that way. They're going to blame it on whoever is in the White House. And there's actually a lot of data to back this up. And this is what Ian Millhiser talks about in his piece on Think Progress. He actually cites an example where it was actually, of all people, Ronald Reagan who got blamed for some of the economic policies early in his administration that he actually did not have control of. He talks about how when he took office, it was actually the Federal Reserve who rose their interest rates quite a bit to try to stave off inflation, and that actually led to quite an economic downturn early in President Reagan's term, even though it wasn't necessarily his fault. And despite this, he actually had his poll numbers dip down into the 40s, and in the 1982 midterm election, he actually lost his party, the Republicans, actually lost quite a few seats to the Democrats back in 1982. Again, this despite the fact that, well, the fault of the economy struggling early in Reagan's administration was actually due to the previous Fed chair that was put in place during Jimmy Carter. Of course, that's a lot more complicated, talking about how Jimmy Carter probably also kind of got screwed over himself. But the point is, though, even though the fault wasn't necessarily Reagan's, he still took the blame for the economic downturn of the early 80s. And all you got to do for further examples is, well, look at Obama during his early administration years, even though the economic recession, the Great Recession, whatever you want to call it, occurred technically during the last year of the Bush administration, Obama still got a lot of the heat for that. In fact, if you talk to a lot of people back in the early 2010s, I don't know if you remember this, Hunter, but they all said Obama caused the Great Recession and the market crash, even though technically in 2008, it was actually Bush in office. Do you remember any of those interactions?
Of course. But that one... Most people were able to discern between the two and had recognized the 8 years under Bush and how poorly things went. I mean, Bush had a really negative approval rating by the end of his second term.
Well, that's certainly true. I think especially during that first year and during the 2008 election. But as we got further into the Obama administration years, a lot of people forgot that. They said, why isn't the economy recovering? Well, I guess Obama put it in this place in the first place. And that's partially the reason why I think the Dems struggled so much during the midterm elections of 2010 and 2014. And they even kind of struggled to a degree in 2012. Really, the only reason they won and Obama got reelected is that he had an excellent campaign strategy where he was kind of pinpointing where people needed to turn out and vote. So people have a short memory in terms of what actually causes an economy to go through a downturn. And that's, again, what concerns me about this possible scenario in 2020, where, again, let's say the economy is basically performing the way it is right now. Well, if Trump loses and you get, I don't care who it is, whether it's a Sanders or a Warren or a Joe Biden or a Kamala Harris or a Beto O'Rourke or a Pete Buttigieg, doesn't matter. If they get in office and there's an economic crash, even if it's because of previous policies from the Trump administration or even going back to the Obama and the Bush administrations, and it's because of Republican obstructionism, it doesn't matter because you're still the face of the nation when you're near the president. And that's what concerns me, because if there is a downturn during the first few years of a new Democratic president, they're going to get the blame in 2024. And what's really scary, Hunter, is if Trump loses in 2020, the face of the Republican Party, the style of it, is completely going to change by 2024. You're going to see a lot of people completely disavow Donald Trump. Matt has talked about this as well, where they're just going to say, I was taking orders, or I was against him the whole time. It's going to be really funny to see the about-face Republicans do against Trump when he leaves office. So you're going to see an entirely new Republican Party, I think, in 2024. Not necessarily any better in terms of policy, but better in terms of their public persona that they put out to the general public. You're going to get what I think is far more scary than Trump, and that's someone who shares a lot of his same policy views, but they actually do it with a smile. They don't use that same abrasive style that Donald Trump uses. And that's someone that I think is far more scary in 2024 that could knock off a Democratic president, and also the fact that they would probably be a whole lot better at getting legislation passed than Donald Trump, because if there's one small saving grace of having Trump in the White House as a Republican is that, well, he's actually not very good at getting things done. He's actually been pretty ineffective at getting any legislative action actually enacted. So, yeah, it just kind of gets me thinking. If the economy is not actually going through a downturn by 2020, and I'm not saying I'm necessarily cheering for this, I just think it's inevitable. It's going to happen. We're due for a recession, and the policies put in place by Trump, and by the way, started under both the Bush and the Obama administrations, they don't get through this scot-free, because if you look at what happened after the Great Recession, we didn't really do a whole lot to actually address what caused the Great Recession. What's happened is I think Trump's taken a lot of these kind of bad policies that were continued by Bush and Obama and actually kind of ramped them up to an 11, just basically escalating the incoming economic crisis that we're going to be having. So that's my big concern for 2020 coming up, is that if you actually get a Democrat that wins and then faces the blame and has to take the blame for an economic downturn that's not their fault, you could absolutely end up with a disastrous scenario in 2022 and 2024 where you get that so-called friendly Republican in office in 2024, which is basically just Donald Trump, but who's better at policy and does it with a smile and someone who's not so abrasive. And then, of course, you would have to talk about what would happen in 2022. It would be an absolute disastrous midterm election for the Democrats where they could possibly lose and go down to a filibuster-proof majority for the Republicans on the other side. So I don't know. What do you think, Hunter? Are you nervous about that at all?
I'm absolutely nervous. I do understand what you're saying. I get that.
Yeah. Walk me off the plank here and tell me why maybe there's hope where if there is a downturn during a first-term Democratic presidency, maybe the public would smart up, or maybe the potential president would be good at saying, hey, this actually wasn't my fault.
I think here's the fatal flaw of your reasoning.
That
does make sense by how things have gone in the past, mm-hmm. but we are in a new era and the beginning of a new era, and potentially I see more likely than having a recession and then the American people seeing it and going, oh, the Republicans caused that, now we'll vote for the Democrats, is that the Republicans, by having control for so long, for having the presidency of 8 more years, will make it so it's impossible to get out of power.
But at that point,
we've seen how they wanted, how they're able to abuse norms. And I feel that they would do absolutely everything, that no matter how small of a minority of people are voting for the Republican Party, they would remain in complete control by any means necessary.
So that's
my thought. If Republicans get blamed for a recession by having it occur in like a few years to several years, it's dangerous because they might rewrite every way that the Constitution is interpreted by who they're appointing to these courts.
So you're saying it would be more disastrous if they actually won in 2020?
I think, yes. That
Yeah, I don't disagree.
But see, you're right, though. That's how it always has been. But
yeah.
I think we're in a time where potentially we're going into uncharted territories, and it's just no longer a politicians that have virtue as any sort of principle.
If there's one reason why I wouldn't like this scenario is that 2020 is a census year, and if Republicans do well in 2020, that's probably going to mean we're going to have continued gerrymandering throughout the country. But then I got to balance it out with the fact that I wish people would be smart enough to recognize who actually causes policies, who actually causes the outcomes of policies, I should say. I just don't think most Americans, granted, people who listen to this station, you and me, and even our conservative callers, they generally follow politics pretty closely and can discern who's caused the effects of each policies, if that makes any sense. But it's more the people who just kind of vote for someone because, well, I guess I could have a beer with them. Or they say, well, this person, I just don't like her very much. Or I just want someone to get into office and shake things up. It's the people that don't pay attention very much that I'm concerned about that would be persuaded by an argument if there were some kind of downturn during a Democratic administration. I just don't. Unfortunately, it's kind of an intelligence test, and I don't think a lot of voters are – this is going to sound really douchey right now, but I don't feel like a lot of voters follow politics enough closely to actually come to a conclusion as to what the causes are of the outcomes, because people are emotional creatures. They vote on their emotions. They don't actually – look at policy positions and say, well, I like this guy's policies more, and I like this guy's policies. I don't like this one. Or he's done this for the economy. He hasn't done this for the economy. People generally vote on emotion, and if they feel like, well, the economy's not doing well and this person's in office, well, I'm going to go against them and their party.
Well, this is why I focus so much on, like, media consolidation, mm-hmm. and how much corporate control is in, obviously, the legacy the established media, but now taking control of any sort of internet, new media, that corporations are controlling the message that they want. And that's what's scary, because they will push out and they will keep people mm-hmm. at a level of ignorance intentionally, because it's easier to control with the less that people want to dive in, want to learn more, and just are taking what they hear at face value.
So what do you think about this? 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Do you think I'm absolutely nuts thinking that there actually is a scenario for the Democrats that could be worse than Trump winning, and that's a Democrat winning in 2020 and then going through an economic downturn? Love to give your thoughts on that, because it's something I've thought about for the last few months, and I'm glad our buddy there over at Think Progress, Ian Milheiser, is kind of thinking along the same lines. In fact, we might try to get him on the show in the next couple of days to maybe discuss this a little bit further, because you have to think in long term with politics. 2008, we, of course, made that mistake where we thought, well, we got Obama in office. We don't need to do anything else. That's not our listeners, obviously. That's more the casual followers of politics, where they thought, well, we got Obama in office. We can just wipe our hands and go away. And then we saw what happened in 2010, to a degree what happened in 2012, and especially what happened in 2014. So send us your thoughts. You can give us a call, 952-946-6205, email comment at am950radio.com, or also comment on our Facebook stream. Let's go to the phones before we head to our next commercial break and get to some other headlines throughout the day. Let's go to David in Shakopee, who wants to talk about the economy and manufacturing specifically. Hey there, David. What do you think?
Hey, well, I was going to talk about how I was in, I've been in manufacturing for about 25 years, and what I've noticed over the years is that every time there's an election, the manufacturing slows down just a little bit, especially in the year prior, whenever the campaigns begin. But because it's slowed down a little bit even before now, it's a marker. Now, manufacturing always slows down before a recession, every mm-hmm. single time. So, if we're slowing down, and we are, if we're slowing down, then something's on the horizon. But then you started, while I was waiting, you were talking about a whole bunch of other stuff, and I would like to comment on that.
Oh, absolutely.
It's really interesting because, you know, people, you're absolutely right. People don't remember. People, I mean, let's start with the 2008 recession. They forget that both McCain and Obama suspended their campaigns and flew to Washington and met with Bush so the three of them could try and figure out what to do about the banks failing.
That's right, yes.
So I actually had an argument with somebody recently where they're like, oh, Obama caused this. I'm like, Obama couldn't have caused it. He wasn't even in office yet. Remember when McCain and Obama suspended their campaigns? It's like, oh, yeah. I'm like, yeah, exactly. So it was happening before he was in office. Couldn't possibly have been him. So, but the other thing is this. That recession was caused by the freedom we had given the banks with the Graham-Leach-Bliley Act, which was a Republican bill that Bill Clinton put a signed statement on, a full page of him praising how it was going to modernize banking and make everything so wonderful and it was going to be great for the economy and great for everybody. So we can't have another socially liberal, fiscally conservative in there. We can't have it. Mm-hmm. Because we saw what happened. Bill was socially liberal, fiscally conservative. He went with the Republicans on that, and that's where the 2008 crash came from. You know, people say, oh, well, it happened on Bush's watch, but it didn't. It happened on Clinton's watch. It just took that long for it to really hit us.
Oh, you're absolutely right, David. Yeah, it was the policies of the Clinton administration and the Bush administration, and I think especially during Obama, a lot of the causes of the recession were not addressed at all. And Obama's policies were okay for the economy, but they've been put on by an 11 to Trump, taken up to another level in terms of just putting us at another complete bubble that eventually is going to burst.
And so many people have no idea about this stuff. Mm-hmm. They just think that a policy that Trump puts in today is going to affect them tomorrow. It's not. Mm-hmm. It takes a little for anything that they do to really affect us, to really even start to affect us. So anything, you know, you can't even blame if a Democrat were to get in office in 2020 and or get elected in 2020 and take office in 2021 and then it hits any time in the first year, can't possibly be his fault, cause his or her fault, excuse me, can't possibly be their fault, proper pronoun, so because anything they do can't really affect anything just yet. It takes time for all that to take effect. It has to disseminate out into the economy and cause, you know, have consequences. Let's put it that way.
Hey, David, I got to let you go here because we are really running late here and need to get into our next break, but certainly some good points you brought up there. And I forgot about that congressional vote that was taken by McCain and Obama leading up to the 2008 election. We're going to take one more time out, try to get to a few more calls. You're listening to The Repartee with Brett and Hunter.
Visit the wine bar at Cafe Latte and enjoy a unique handcrafted pizza and glass of wine. The perfect place for an intimate night or an evening with friends. Choices range from spicy Italian sausage and sweet roasted peppers to the one-of-a-kind nacho chicken pizza layered with blue corn tortilla chips. The approachable wine list offers over 30 by the glass with special emphasis on wines from Washington State. End your night with one of Cafe Latte's melt-in-your-mouth desserts, 850 Grand Avenue, St. Paul.
Tom Hartman here letting you know how you can save money with All Energy Solar. One of the myths about solar is that it's too expensive and you need lots of money down. The truth? Solar is available for little or no money down. And if you have a great site for solar, you might even save money right away on a monthly basis. So don't wait to switch. You'll see your investment pay off the sooner you switch to All Energy Solar. So start saving today and visit allenergysolar.com.
No matter what your taste, you'll find the music you're looking for at the Electric Fetus. Pick from rock, pop, international, roots music, and so much more on CD and vinyl. Or create your own compilation of favorites with the exclusive Mix and Burn CD station, only available at the Electric Fetus. Dust off your vinyl or just make some space by turning your unwanted music into cash. The used selection changes daily, so check out the new arrivals often. 2000 4th Avenue South in Minneapolis and online at efetus.com.
Welcome back to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee, kind of going through a contrarian take here on why it might be better for Dems for Trump to actually win in 2020. I did get a message from Janet saying resolutions and legislation are not the same thing. That might have been on me actually misspeaking or not speaking correctly. I meant what actually are the results of legislation is kind of what I was going with there. So that might be on me misspeaking. Let's go to the phone calls right now and go to Jim in St. Louis Park. Hey there, Jim. What do you think?
Well, I'm thinking about a different scenario because I think that it's very likely that Trump will be impeached in at least the House. And then if possible, he could be impeached in the Senate, too, which I think would throw
just
the
back
Republicans
up for one. Are you talking
chaos.
Are you talking possibly during a second Trump term?
No, I'm thinking before 2020 and that he won't even be on the ballot.
Ooh,
in 2020.
You really think? I mean, with Nancy Pelosi in the House basically saying there's no scenario where she would impeach him, you think they
that's
would actually
not. Did you see their press conference from last night? Because that's not at all what she said. Because she said she just wants to gather more evidence. And I think what we need to
that's
do is
another way of saying
hearing.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, or throw it to a committee, to either one of the committees from yesterday. But I don't understand, you know, when people, I always hear people talk about who the Democratic candidates are that they're going to run against Trump. So people either believe one of two things. One, that what Trump did wasn't serious enough to be impeached, which is, you know, bizarre, or that to our government is so ineffective that he can't be impeached.
All right. Thanks so much for the call there, Jim. Want to get to one more call before the end of the show. Yeah, I'm not buying that Trump is going to be impeached before 2020. Not because I don't think he should be impeached, but just because of Pelosi and the House Democratic leadership. And yeah, as Jim was saying, they are using some strong language saying that they want to conduct investigations. But that's just basically impeachment light, which I think is exactly what she wants. She's trying to kind of walk that fine line where she's saying, hey, we are holding Trump accountable, but she doesn't ultimately want to impeach him, especially during an election year. Let's go to one final call. Mark in Fridley. Hey there, Mark.
Hey, guys. We can't give up. We need to elect an actual progressive. We don't need to throw in the towel. We don't need to be told that we need to vote for the person that sounds like a progressive but is actually working for the establishment and is a neoliberal. CNN spent the entire weekend attacking Bernie Sanders because out of the $44 million, their investigative team found that $2,700 was donated by a pharmaceutical company. So they said, what a giant hypocrite. What a horrible person. What he took, that's an infinitesimal amount, and that's petty and that's cheap.
Hey, thanks so much for the call there, Mark. Yeah, you and I talked about this a few days ago, I think, Hunter. Maybe it was last week. Just an absolute hit job on one of the candidates there. That would be Bernie Sanders. All right, one final note before I go. Again, this is a complete contrarian take. I'm still obviously going to vote for the Democratic candidate in 2020. I think the reasons of voting for a Democrat in 20 far outweigh the whole kind of convoluted scenario I was running through. That's it for the repartee. We'll talk to you tomorrow.